This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Want to talk to us at World Wide Wave? Email us at worldwidewave@ymail.com. This is the world we live in.
Surfing the globe, bringing you LGBT news, views, and personalities from around the world, one country at a time. It's the World Wide Wave here on Joy 94.9.
Thank you to Emily and Matt of Generation Next. I totally agree. Don't be contactable to your ex. They're an ex for a reason. This is the World Wide Wave here on Joy 94.9. I'm Tom, joined here with Squirrel and Beck. Tonight, Pakistan, an Islamic republic and historically a part of the British Empire. That has to make for some interesting stuff. Tonight we speak with Alina, an Australian queer activist who was born in Pakistan. We learn lots of fun, fast facts here shortly, but as always, let's kick off the night with some music. What fabulous tune do you have for us tonight, Beck?
The song is called Ek Ass, and the band is called Alag The Band. How amazing that they've got the words The Band in their name.
Racy. Worldwide Wave here on Joy 94.9. It is time, as always, for fun, fast facts in Pakistan. What exciting fun, fast facts do we have this evening? Well, being lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transsexual is considered a taboo vice in parts of society of Pakistan, and gay rights are close to non-existent. According to Pakistani law, homosexuality is illegal. Current ban on homosexuality comes from a British colonial era law, which has been on the books since 1860.
Just like Japan.
It does sound familiar, doesn't it?
Yes.
Something we've heard before. There are further subsequent laws further restricting LGBT rights under the guise of protecting public morality. The public tends to oppose homosexuality and other forms of alternative sexual orientation. Doesn't sound like there is too much going on. Specifically, Pakistan does not have any civil rights laws to prohibit discrimination or harassment on the basis of real or perceived sexual orientation. Of course, goes without saying, or perhaps not, no same-sex marriage or civil unions in Pakistan.
Did you say no same-sex marriage?
No same-sex marriage, no civil unions. Doesn't happen. The LGBT community in Pakistan has not has not formally begun to campaign for LGBT rights, but there is growing tolerance for social gatherings of gay men in the cities, and it's getting a little bit okay. There was a move in 2009. The Supreme Court of Pakistan ruled in favor of the civil rights of transsexual citizens. So a little bit of a movement there, some positive lights. And we're actually going to speak about transgender a little bit more specifically later in the show. Yes. Just some fun, interesting facts. Prostitution, punishable by up to 25 years. However,
That's not fun. That's the interesting part.
Is that heterosexual prostitution
as well?
It's just
prostitution. It doesn't actually go one way or the other. It says 25 years. However, it gets more specific in the terms of what we would normally call homosexual acts. And the exact wording, whoever voluntarily has carnal intercourse against the order of nature with any man, woman, or animal shall be punished with imprisonment for life or with imprisonment and a fine. And so only 25 years if you sell yourself, but if you sell yourself to the same sex, it's 25 years plus life. So interesting.
That is interesting. That's quite a harsh law. I heard, do they also have another law about getting married? Going through the ceremony of getting married?
Going through the ceremony of getting married? What do you mean?
Well, isn't it illegal? I heard this Article 496 that if you go through the ceremony of being married, but you're not allowed to, kind of like they just did, you know, on the TV show the other week.
Like for fun?
Yeah, yeah.
You can be imprisoned for that.
Why, yes, in fact, for 7 years.
So if you had a television show and you got married in a same-sex ceremony, you could be imprisoned.
For 7 years.
Even though it's not legal.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So 7 years.
You can't even go through the motions of marriage. And they've got a couple of other interesting sort of bans on text messages and things that we'll get into later. But I think, first of all, we need to hear that upbeat.
So welcome back to World Wide Wave. We're a show that takes you from country to country, talking about issues that interest you and the media in that country. Today we are talking about Pakistan. And we're about to chat with Alina. Now, Alina Muhammad Ali, she works in the government, and she was born in Pakistan, but she's lived in Australia most of her life. And we'll be talking to her a little bit later. But next, we've got another song coming up for you. Yeah, it's called Hussein Awalo, and it's by a group called Janoon. Hi, you're back with the World Wide Wave, and we are privileged to have a guest from a Pakistani background, Alina Muhammad Ali. She's a solicitor. So she was the principal and a policy solicitor in a community legal centre and has a long history of community legal centre involvement. She's been published frequently and spoken regularly at conferences and workshops. Alina facilitates the Queer Muslims in Australia Yahoo group and is the chair of the Australian GLBTIQ Multicultural Council Incorporated. Alina lives in Melbourne with her partner, their young son, and their two cats.
Welcome, Alina.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here.
Now, Alina, we're going to get stuck straight into it. So we understand that you were born in Pakistan and travel back every now and then to visit your grandparents. When was the last time you were there?
Well, surprisingly so. I was actually there as recent as January this year, which was a bit of a present for my mum and dad, who decided that I needed to go see my grandparents, and I had some time off, so I took the ticket and went for 2.5 weeks.
Oh, that's lovely. And are you out to everybody over there?
Look, anyone who really matters to me, and it's important that they knows that, you know, my partner's a woman and knows that we have a young son who just turned 2. So, yeah, look, I'm out to my granddad, my uncles, you know, aunties, heaps of the cousins I like. The ones I don't like, I couldn't care less. So, yeah, it's not a secret. I've never hid my sexuality. In fact, I briefly schooled in Pakistan, and I used to say I was bisexual then when I was there in high school, and it was never really an issue.
Now, you say that it wasn't really an issue, and we know, we heard in your bio that you pretty much grew up and have been in Australia forever. Now, your family that you say it doesn't really matter to them that you go back and see, are they full-time Pakistanis, like they've lived there their whole lives?
Yeah, but you've got to understand, Pakistan, not unlike Australia, is divided into different classes. I mean, whether we like it or not, Australia is still a very classist society. You've got your working class, your lower class, your middle class, your upper middle class, and you're very wealthy. And Pakistan is no different. So the class that we belong to in Pakistan is known as the educated elite, which means everyone's gone to uni, everyone has multiple degrees, everyone has a profession, no one would go into a trade. And, you know, everyone's either a lawyer or a doctor or a banker, or, you know, the radical ones become artists. Oh, no. But when you're in that world, things aren't as difficult as you might think they are. Oh. So being gay or lesbian or queer and being in that educated elite class isn't actually difficult to be, because no one really cares. I mean, I actually think most of the people I went to school with, every time when I'm in Pakistan and I go over to one of their houses and just want to have dinner, out comes a bottle of whiskey, out comes, like, you know, bottles of, you know, expensive imported wines. And I'm like, dudes, it's Tuesday night, you know, save it for the weekend. And they're like, nah, we're going to drink it now. So,
if I could ask a theoretical question, if that seems to be the common way of the elite educated class, can I ask, is it the elite educated class that run the government, or can I say safely that there are a lot of political people within that class?
Yeah, look, I mean, the educated elite has a mixture of people, yes, in government power, but a lot of people more in business power. So people who are running the multinationals that, you know, are very big in Pakistan. I mean, we, you know, most people if they look at a soccer ball or if they look at, you know, the back of the clothing, they'll see, ooh, made in Pakistan. So, and it's Nike and it's Adidas and it's all these labels that we're very used to here in Australia, but they're being made in a country like Pakistan and owned by very wealthy people in Pakistan. And so those are the people that are not perhaps having the direct power of government, but may have power behind the scenes. I mean, it's also a country, unfortunately, that's been racked by strife since it was created, because the military, and this is the truth, the military, unfortunately, keeps on taking control of the country, and there is no country, I think, in the world where a military government has ever brought good to that government beyond a brief period of stability, and then it just goes to hell.
Yeah, that doesn't sound very good. And well, speaking of the military strife and also just the decisions of wealthy people, in March, Pakistan, along with 57 countries belonging to the Organization of Islamic Cooperation at the UN, declared opposition to the upcoming UN Human Rights Council's discussion on discrimination and violence against lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender people. As a Pakistani Australian, or just, you know, someone who's got family over there, what are your thoughts on all this?
Oh, look, I mean, obviously, if people are vocal, or even if they're not vocal about discrimination and oppression, it's upsetting. There's no doubt there whatsoever. As someone who's got Pakistani ethnicity, I'm not surprised. I mean, you're talking about a country where, like I said, I can go to Pakistan, I can live in a class where I can drink any alcohol I want, although alcohol is prohibited in that country, there is prohibition, yet I can drink it there, I can hang out with my mates or people I've just met, you know, I can go to swanky parties, I can live in this facade of a world. However, when it comes to what the public face is, the government has to appeal to the masses, and the masses are poor. It's a country with, like, I think 130 plus million people, and most of those people are struggling, like, on, you know, a couple of dollars a day. And so you've got a country which also then uses religion to keep the masses in control, and reminds people that, well, you don't want to you don't want to revolt and have an uprising, because if you're a good Muslim, oh, guess what, you'll die, you know, and go to heaven. So of course it's disappointing to hear these things, but it's also the party line.
Well, it's understandable that the old theory, you know, controlling the masses. But what about when they actually, you know, pass a law that even affects the elite? And
It's not going to. Like, I mean, in terms of, like, I mean, I've visited on and off for the last few years. I mean, I don't know any other way to say it. But, you know, if you live in Toorak, you don't care what's happening, even in Malvern. Like, you know, that's the best way to explain it. I don't live in Toorak, but I'm trying to explain that you can live in a country without caring what's going on in the rest of the country. And that's what people who have privilege and power can do, because they don't want to get involved in, you know, issues that which are extremely important, but they want to detach from, because it's a losing battle. I've been asked repeatedly, you know, you've worked in human rights law, you've worked in anti-discrimination, why don't you come to Pakistan and work? And it's not my sexuality that stops me. It's the fact that I speak my mind, and I don't want to constantly have battles with people who go, you know, sometimes it's better not to speak your mind. I'd rather not live there.
Fair enough. It's important to live somewhere where you feel comfortable being who you are. Just curious, in terms of, you were saying about wealthy people, is something like mobile phones, texting, is that a common, everybody's got a phone, everybody texts, or is that something that just the wealthy folks have?
Oh, my God, I was in shock when I was in Pakistan in January, because even people who earn a dollar a day, phones are so cheap. Why? Because the big mobile companies have been allowed to put up towers everywhere, so you can't walk 100 metres before spotting another tower. Pakistan, India and Bangladesh, the subcontinent, have some of the best mobile reception in the world. I had a phone, a SIM card while I was there, and it freaked me out as to how cheap it was for me to call my partner and my son. And it freaked me out that it was so easy to get hold of a phone. So, yeah, it's absolutely true. Everyone walks around with a phone, or one or two or three, as many as you want.
Well, recently, the Pakistan Telecommunication Authority put a ban on 1,600 words that it deemed pornographic or offensive to Islam. Now, some of the interesting ones include words that you can't use in a text message: gay, lesbian, homosexual, fairy, and condom. And we always like to look at things on a lighter side. Some of the more interesting ones: athlete's foot, glazed donut, Jesus Christ, Satan, and my favorite, flogging the dolphin. I'm not actually sure what that means. But we bring this up only because...
You should, because I think that's got something to do with boys more than with boys than girls.
Yes, if anyone understands flogging the dolphin, please do give us a call. What are your thoughts on that, such a wide range of banned words?
Look, when China did this same exact thing, the world was, in uproar. I mean, any form of censorship... in terms of, people's personal, writing text to each other is wrong. It's black and white. If that's what they've decided to do, of course it's wrong. But I doubt that it will last, and I doubt that it'll actually work, because from what little time I have spent there, most people are pretty savvy and most people are pretty good at getting ways around it. I mean, alcohol is probably the best example. This country has had prohibition since 1947 or 1957, whenever. I mean, it was created in 47. And yet... if you've got power, or even if you've got like a couple of bucks in your pocket and you've got a connection, you can get hold of a supplier, inverted commas, and get your hands on wines from France or from Spain or from the United States.
Believe it.
I was sitting in Pakistan drinking Jacob's Creek, thinking this is just bizarre.
Yeah, Australian wine.
I'm drinking Jacob's Creek.
No, it sounds like it's
watching the tennis. While I was watching the tennis on cable TV.
Alcohol seems like it's freely available. Is the gay movement in Pakistan a bit of a party? It sounds like it's parades and parties and lots of fun, or is it more activism and organised political?
I mean, the work that I do isn't focused on countries. I mean, the work I do with queer Muslims is very much focused here in Australia. So I do communicate with people in other countries, for example, Canada and England, the United States, but I don't actually have a contact in Pakistan. I've got one I've got a couple in Nepal. But I don't actually have any links with anyone in Pakistan who is actually doing any advocacy or activism the way I do. I mean, the party thing is a private thing. It's just basically people having, a party with here come 300 people and let's all drink too much and, wake up the next morning with a sore head and the wrong person. So, but that's not what I would call, that's not what you or I would call a gay movement as such, because it's not that visible movement. However, I do stress that when I was there, which is 20 plus years ago, I didn't know anyone like myself. And I've realised, that uncle that never marries, that auntie that has 12,000 cats. Yeah.
There's always the auntie that has 12,000 cats.
We do have to pause for a moment and go to our sponsors, but if you can just hang on the line, we might hear a little bit more from you shortly. Thank you.
And that was the song Blood Money by Mustafa Zahid. That's a new track from this year, actually.
And this is the World Wide Wave here on Joy 94.9. We are in Pakistan this week, where we are discussing with Alina, a Australian born in Pakistan, some very interesting issues. As one of the things we found out why we were doing some investigation for this show, seriously, there has been a ban on... 1,600 words that can no longer be SMS'd in Pakistan. But one of the interesting things that we came up with was flogging the dolphin has been banned. And of course, you know me, I have to Google and find out what it means. It means extremely aggressive manipulation of the male genitalia. There you go. I can see why that was banned.
And I think I actually did mention earlier that this is something you would probably like.
You did. Spot on. I still had to Google it, though.
We could have asked our guests.
How about we ask our listeners if they have any words that they would like to ban on SMS? If you've got a word that you'd like to ban on SMS, why don't you SMS us on 0427JOY949 or give us a call on 1300 JOY 949, or email us on air@joy.org.au.
Can I chuck in a word?
Please, yes.
Normal.
Normal.
Oh, I hate
it's
that
a
word.
Dirty word.
Oh, yeah, what is normal?
I hate that even more than heteronormative or straight. Like, I hate normal.
There's our first word of the evening to be banned. Normal.
No more normal.
I'm putting it on my list. Now, Alina, we wanted to ask you a bit about hijras. And have I said that right?
You have. It's really hijras. Yep. It's hijras. Look, I mean, my exposure to hijras was when I was probably about 12 or 13. And I was living in Pakistan and I was in the car with my dad. And what I thought was a man dressed up as a woman came to the door and knocked on the door and started begging for money and was very overtly effeminate in actions, hands, makeup, dressed, you know, very like a woman. And I said to my dad, what's that? Because I'd never seen a hijra before. And my dad said, it's a hijra. And I said, what's a hijra? And he went, ask your mother. So I was like, okay.
Like all good dads do.
And I think, oh, this has got to be something really, really exciting because the ask your mother thing was my clue. And I went to my mum, and my mum's always been, and she still is, amazing about being quite matter-of-fact about things, which can be good or bad. And I asked her, I said, we saw someone, and Dad said, I have to ask you, what's a hijra? And Mum goes, it's a eunuch. And I'm like, all right, now I don't know what a eunuch is. What's a eunuch? And that was my mother's instant response. And my mum said, well, basically, there are men that are allowed into the women-only areas, but they're only allowed if their genitals are removed. To which, of course, I screamed because it sounded like the most horrible thing possible to an 11, 12, 13-year-old.
To a man of any age, that sounds horrible.
Yeah, pretty much. But I couldn't leave it at that, and so I had 50 million questions for my mum, like, well, why would a man agree to that? And why would a man, you know, what does it mean? And what do you mean they're allowed in the women areas? And how come we don't see them walking around in the women areas we're in? And all these questions. And Mum then explained to me that this is something that's happened since, you know, Iran, Persia, since the Mughal Empire, that there were an entire class of men who were allowed into the women-only areas and had these special places of privilege and power and position in, you know, the emperor's courts and the kingdoms, because they weren't men, as strictly speaking men are. However, because they still had the physical strength of men and they still thought like men, they were still men, yet they were also women because of their, well, what they decided, the lack of genitalia made them a woman. So it was this kind of living between two worlds. I mean, you might not have the anatomy, but that didn't take away your gender. However, you couldn't completely adopt another gender. However, you were allowed into that space. So it was a kind of flowing, free world that hijras have or had.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And we found that in 2009, the Supreme Court of Pakistan ruled in favor of civil rights of transsexual citizens. But we're just wondering, you saw one when you were in your teens, but since 2009 or since you were in your teens, yeah, how is life for them there now? Do you feel like it's accepted? Is this...
Well, basically, you said historically they sometimes held places high in the empire. Mm-hmm. But you said the one that you first met was a beggar. So has time changed their role in society?
Look, I don't think so. Like, I mean, when I was in Pakistan now, I make it a point of giving charity money, which is, you know, all Muslims have to do it. And I would keep little money, bits of money in my wallet to just hand out of the window when we'd be parked at the lights. And I made it a point of giving it to you know, people who had visible disabilities, and not just, you know, young men coming up and knocking on the door window and begging. But I would always make it a point to give it to the hijras, because hijras, unfortunately, there are a lot of people who don't understand them. And if anything, they do live, I think, in the city, at least from what I've been told, a horrible, horrible life. Like, they're more protected, let's say, when they're in the village where they've born and brought up, so they're part of the community, and they're one of them, let's say, one of us, like that crowd or group of community of people. But my understanding is that no, the hijras basically have been relegated to a life. But it's not just begging; they're also they've used their talents in that they know they're an ostracized class of people to become performers. And I know that people can hire hijras to dance and to do, you know, to perform shows. And they use this to make a livelihood, and they use this to basically survive. So it's interesting because they are very, very visible. So it's not like they're hidden. I mean, they're not. They're very, very visible. But they're also that you're not going to see them, you know, running government or in positions of power, you know, running multinational companies. But you will see them when you're going to the local shops.
Well, Alina, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us here on World Wide Wave. Now, you're also the facilitator for the Queer Muslims in the Australia Yahoo group. Is that correct?
I am.
Can you give us a quick little information on how someone can get in touch with you if they'd like to join?
Well, thankfully enough, thanks to the internet, if you just Google Queer Muslims in Australia, Yahoo group, bang, we come up. Look, we're an online safe space for LGBTIQ Muslims in Australia. I say that because when I set the group up in 2004, there was nothing in Australia, but there was heaps happening in England and Canada and America. So it's for people living here who identify in some way, whether religiously or spiritually or whatever way, with Islam, and then also are basically questioning or happy with their sexuality or gender identity. And so, yeah, it's a network of people from all over Australia. And I'll also quickly say that I chair the Multicultural Queer Council as well, which is for basically anyone who's multicultural and also LGBTIQ, and that's the AGMC.
Well, there you are. Thank you again so much for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it.
No worries. Have a good night.
You too. Good night. Welcome back to the World Wide Wave here on Joy 94.9. We're the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time, each week stopping off, talking about the news and views of interest to all of yous. We've just been chatting with Alina Muhammad Ali, who's here in Australia right now, in fact at home with her young son, but she is also of Pakistani descent, origin, and she was just back there in January visiting her grandparents and has a lot of interesting information ranging from hijras to text messaging to knowing what flogging the dolphin was to, most importantly, talking about how it is a class thing, what's accepted and what's not accepted.
It was very interesting to hear that about the classes and how things are easy at the top and a little more accepted and just maybe not so many questions asked at the top, I guess, is a better way to present it.
And coming up now, we've got another song.
We have got another song by a group called Roxen, and the song is called Marae Sathia. This is a 2011 release.
Here on Joy 94.9.
You're back with the World Wide Wave, and that was Roxen.
Rockin' Roxen. Of course, we are in Pakistan this week. In mid-2011, for the first time in history, the United Nations passed a resolution to protect and uphold gay rights universally. Pakistan, whether they like it or not, is under that resolution because they are part of the United Nations.
But isn't it true that prior to the panel discussion scheduled for the 7th of March, the Pakistani ambassador to the UN, in a letter to the Human Rights Council, stated that LGBT rights have, quote, nothing to do with fundamental human rights?
Correct. So Pakistan has made a stance, and to be truthful, even though that Pakistan is part of the United Nations, there is no enforcement mechanism to make violation of this universal mandate punishable. In other words, the UN has put this out. It is historical. It is first time. It is monumental. But when it comes down to it, there's nothing to say other than we'd really like you to follow it.
It's accepted.
Nothing happens if you don't.
We could put that in a text message.
That's right.
Speaking of, what was your one word? What would you ban?
I'm not allowed to say that because it's banned on air.
Oh, yeah, we're at that time slot again.
We are at the
behave
yourself time slot.
Too bad.
I would ban something that I use all the time. It's not even a word. It's an acronym, LOL.
Oh, that is so 1999. It needs to go.
Know, I can't help using it, though. I would ban it.
I kind of like Alina's take on the normal, you know? Like, what's normal? Why should the word normal even be allowed?
Hmm.
So I guess I would ban the use of the word gay, but you can't tell in a derogatory way. Not like, he's so cute and he's gay, or, oh my God, I think she's gay and she likes me. But actually, like, oh, that's so gay, or the way high schoolers might use it now. I would put a ban on it.
Also making the list. I like it.
There you go. Just like the Pakistani government. We agree.
We do agree the word of gay you know. Is now banned.
Speaking of, another thing we agree on is that dance music is good. Tell us, do we have any dance music in the lineup? And hopefully the next song.
We do have some dance music coming up. This is a 2010 track, and it's by Lubna. It's called Nahi Gina.
I could dance to this. Here, on the World Wide Wave.
Welcome back to the World Wide Wave here on Joy at 94.9. We have been in Pakistan this week. Always remember that whether you're listening to us now or later, you can give us an email on our personal email account, worldwidewave@ymail.com. Also, don't forget our Facebook page, World Wide Wave. That's one word. Like it. We like it when you like us. And of course, tweet. Can you tell us what the tweet is?
WJ3@WJ3Joy.
You sound very convincing of that, Squirrel. AJ, we need you back. We've lost all tweet ability since you've gone.
Tweet ability? You just made up a word.
I did. Let's not ban that one. I like it.
Yeah, let's keep that one. In fact, we did learn quite a lot today. What did we learn? We learned about that in Pakistan they ban text messages.
They did. Well, they didn't ban text messages altogether. They just banned 1,600 words from being used in text messages. Some of them quite interesting. Some of them just downright scary. We also had the chance to speak with Alina Mohammadali, as in...
Fly like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
That is correct. Yeah. That's what I was going for. We thank her very much for taking the time to speak with us. If you would like more information on her groups, be sure to Google Queer Muslims in Australia on the Yahoo group. And, of course, she's also the chair of the Australian GLT... Oh, that's a mouthful, isn't it? Australian GLBTIQ Multicultural Council Incorporated. Next week, we are off to the Philippines. Now, we have been to the Philippines before, for those of you who used to listen to us in our old former time slot.
All two of you, thank you.
But with the new and improved time slot, we thought it all right to revisit any country that we had visited before. Don't worry, we'll still get to your country if we haven't gotten there, but we'll be visiting the Philippines next week. Is that right, Squirrel?
We are, and we'll be hearing from Boyabunda, and we've also got a couple local Melbourne folks who are volunteering to come in. And like you heard tonight, if you can't make it into the studio, but you want us to give you a ring because you're Filipino and you've got some news and views that's of interest to use, then by all means, get in touch with us via Facebook or all the myriad of ways Tom's just listed, and we will be more than happy to put you on air.
Not even if you're not Filipino. If you'd like for us to talk about your country, get in contact with us. That would be great.
That's correct. Always looking for interesting people and interesting countries here on the World Wide Wave. We'd like to thank you very much for listening to us tonight.
And a huge thanks to Alina for chatting to us tonight.
There's more Joy news and views at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.